All right. In the talk previous to this one, we began speaking about the relationship between subject and object. We were speaking about the attraction and repulsion that are behind desire. And we said that if one puts the emphasis on what is coming in that relationship between subject and desire, that is, if one is selfishly self-assertive, that produces on the outgoing wave repulsiveness. Complementary to that, if we self-sacrifice and put ourselves into giving love especially on the outgoing flow, then what comes in is attractive. And so we have a very simple psychology or mechanism of the way attraction and repulsion goes. It's something that is so beautiful that the cosmos is such that it can't be misused, because you can't, you'd think, well, maybe somebody in advertising would like to use this to attract to their product, but you can't do it because you have to really be giving. And if you're really giving to produce the attractive force, you can't, that selfish element can't come in. So the cosmos not only gives us object lessons in morality, it is a foolproof scheme that it can't be abused in that way. All right, let's again work with very simple keywords or key principles. If one sacrifices egoism, the kind of egoism that thinks more about the subject than the object, and the object is usually just some sort of embellishment, then you have the sacrifice of the Aries egoism, and you have the sign opposite, you have Libra, which is, again, ruled by Venus. The character is exactly opposite. If you're unselfishly giving love to the other, that sets up the attractive force. But again, using the most basic key word for Taurus is attraction. And again, we see that it is the opposite of Scorpio. So we can see that the Scorpio, the martial key words for Aries and Scorpio rule the force of repulsion, by self-assertion and repulsion. And if we work with Libra and Taurus, self-sacrifice and attraction, again, it's the Venusian signs. Now, there's much more that we could go say about this. Obviously, the intention is in the cardinal sign, the active sign. So if it's an active self-assertion or if it's an active self-sacrifice, that sets up the condition, and the condition is more fixed and is more set, and that is with the Scorpio and Taurus side of it. Just as we saw that the ultimate selfishness, it was the intent for the self-assertion, the very bottom or the deepest part of the desire world is ruled by Saturn. And if you think about the Jupiterian quality, the highest region of the desire world is the region of philanthropy. And that is and always has been Jupiterian. So after a while, you not only sacrifice for the sake of one other, you begin to sacrifice for all in altruism, and then you sacrifice for the whole cosmos, and it becomes universalized. And you can see that desires have different effects. Like if you're going toward the Saturnian direction and taking everything to yourself and pushing everything else away, that's lonely and isolationistic, and it's separative until a person eventually has nothing but fear. Or if the fear festers long enough, it becomes hatred. But if you go in the other direction, the Jupiterian quality is taking you more toward the realms of the spirit, and the more you go toward the direction of the spirit, the more universalized things become, and the broader one's consciousness is, and it's as expansive as Saturn is contractive or concentrative. So there are all kinds of things that we learn about simple astrology. Now, of course, it's not as simple as all of these horoscopes are. There is more to the desire world than the moon, which is that central region of feeling. Mars and Venus, the assertion and sacrifice, and Saturn and Jupiter. All of the planets enter in then. So if you have a horoscope that aren't as obvious as the ones that we're using as examples, what do you do? Well, what you have to do in order to apply this to each and every horoscope is you have to find the relative strengths of each planet to each other planet. And then you look at the relative strength of Mars. And looking at the relative strength of Mars, it gives you a quotient or a coefficient of self-assertion and repulsion. And similarly, the relative quotient, the relative strength of Venus to all of the other planets gives you the quotient of attractability. Now, you can do this in a kind of estimation mathematics, and you can even bring in a secondary factor with Saturn and Jupiter, and it works effectively. And it helps you to interpret all of the other aspects that that are in the emotionality. But I will tell you, it isn't a simple matter. We're doing some of that in an intermediary course, and it works. You can find it in. You can find out the degree of repulsion, even if there aren't a lot of Mars aspects that affect the desire. Well, it does work out. One would assume that if you could see into the desire world, you could tell this almost by the predominance of either shade or tint, that is black or white, or darkness or brightness that would be in the aura. You could tell that right off. All right, we're about ready now to do a tour of the higher desire world. And again, we have really simple lead pipe cinch kinds of horoscopes. We have enough, I think we've got just enough for everybody to get one. 3, 6, 9. Well, no, I don't have enough for everyone. I thought today we would certainly have enough. This is the horoscope of someone who has been one of the most attractive women in the world. The horoscope of Elizabeth Taylor. Libra is rising, and Libra is famed for producing beautiful people, handsome people. Some of this is a very physical thing, physical beauty. Symmetry, poise, balance, and all of those things. I think when Elizabeth Taylor was in her prime, and she did things, the movie Rain Tree County, her beauty was so much, it was almost astonishing how beautiful she was. But sometimes physical beauty is only superficial, and it doesn't represent a kind of a soul beauty. In several languages, the word beauty is the same thing as the word that indicates radiance of light. German is the perfect example. Schön is the word for beautiful, and it's the same word or from the same root as like shine, like sun shines. Rudolf Steiner claims that this is so because the love from the life spirit is shining through that person. This is truly the case with her, because her love, yes, it's highly romanticized by the same aspect, but she's got that conjunction of Uranus and Venus. So to some extent, she is almost a romantic addict, but it is altruistic. And whatever, what also makes her extremely, extremely attractive, even at her age now, and she isn't especially pretty anymore, if she's at any kind of gathering, she just attracts people from all over the place. And this is because she has the Jupiter in there. The Jupiter trines Venus, and Jupiter trines Uranus. And with that kind of quality of giving for the sake of the other, and having the Jupiter-Venus quality, indicates that she's a very attractive person. She's had 8 marriages. I don't know what to say about that. I don't have any moral difficulties with that. I can remember that before my marriage, my wife had been in a previous marriage. And that was a hard thing for me to go through. I was reading Matthew's gospel all over the place, that part again and again, that you're not supposed to be with a divorced person and all of that. I got through it and learned something from it. But I no longer feel that a marriage is successful if it lives long, and it's unsuccessful if it's short. Sometimes a short marriage is very successful, and that's all that's necessary between two people. And sometimes the breakup of a marriage is more important than the continuance of a marriage or the growth of someone. We're saying that self-sacrifice has a quality of giving to it. And there certainly is a lot of generosity in this chart. Jupiter is in the 11th house, and that's an impersonal kind of giving. Plus, she has all of those planets in the 5th house. In the 5th house is the quality of giving. It represents the opportunities to give. Unfortunately, they're all opposite Neptune, so she gets some kind of a strange self-abnegation, and she gets sort of the same feeling that the people who have AIDS have. She takes on the hatred of society, just as we saw yesterday in horoscopes with AIDS. They take on the hatred of society, which is what acquired immunity, immunodisorder is all about. So nonetheless, she's pretty attractive. We should keep moving here. I guess it's going to be... Hey, Bob. I don't think combust Mercury always works. I don't think it's something that you can claim as a mathematical fact. Sometimes when there is a close conjunction like that, it is there, and sometimes it isn't there. If it is in fixed signs, and it is combust, I have found it to be cases of people who spent a lot of the creative energy in non-thoughtful process in a previous life. And so that when it came to rebuilding the archetype in this one, they had difficulty putting together a good mind because they were used to putting the sexual energy down. And I've seen it in the charts of retarded people, retarded or worse people. Yes? I think that the oppositions to Neptune indicate what happens to her, in that her mind is carried away by her emotions. And that's the most common thing. The ancient astrologers used to call the water signs mute signs, because people who were deaf and or dumb had Mercury in a watery sign. And if you've interacted with a lot of people who are deaf, you find out that there's an extreme excitability to them, extreme excitability. And that is Mercury in a watery sign. And it's like Mercury doesn't function well there. Mercury's not a good water skier. All right. The next horoscope is not a horoscope. It's a noon chart. So we can't say much about the houses in it. It's interesting to me. First, let's talk about noon charts. There are, if you don't have the time of birth, there are three things that you can do. You can do what Max Heindel did, and that is put the first house at Aries. And then you get the reflective quality of the signs into the houses. I don't like that myself, because it seems that you then try to say things about the houses that don't work. Another way that it is done, if you don't have the time, is to make it a sunrise chart. And the sunrise chart is that you put the sun exactly on the ascendant and you make the cusps accordingly. This gives you some vague understanding, because sunrise, as we know from planetary hours, does set the tone for the whole day. But it is vague. If you read in the newspaper astrology, all of the captions for newspaper astrology where they say all the Virgos are going to have this happen or all the Sagittarii this, that is done with sunrise astrology. They take a given day and they put the sun exactly on the ascendant, and then they work from there. I use noon charts because, to me, the most important part of astrology, it was for Max Heindel too, the most important factor in astrology is the aspects. If you look in questions and answers, he tells you how to estimate the strengths of a horoscope. Right up there is the aspects, right at the top of things. And if you have a noon chart for any given 24-hour day, you have the best possible chance of having the lunar aspects correct. And so that's why I choose a moon chart and a noon chart, and that's what this is. This is interesting because I like Gene Autry. I dislike Roy Rogers. Because for some, Gene Autry, in the first place, has a real beautiful voice. He has an attractive voice. And I just said to myself, Gene Autry has to be an ideal chart for attraction. And so they didn't have it in my data bank, so I went searching around for biographies and got his place of birth and his date of birth, but nobody had the hour of birth. He was born on a farm, probably in the kitchen table like I was, so he may not have, I'm not sure I was born on the kitchen table. I've heard two different stories, so I don't know for certain. But at any rate, I just knew he was going to have an attractive chart and got it, and there it was. Now, Gene Autry sold millions and millions of records when it was hard to sell millions and millions of records because people were poor and records were expensive. I was almost tempted to bring in Roy Rogers' chart, but I figured, no, the less publicity he gets, the better. You know, he's a Scorpio and his wife is a Scorpio. I think they both passed on by now. And they were both reactionary, fascist kinds of Scorpio. And talk about charts of repulsion. I should have put his in just to spite him. No, I'm just joking about all of that. This is very attractive. I think if we saw the real birth time, it would probably be the second house, because he was fabulously wealthy. And because he has Mercury trying to Pluto, he knew how to use that wealth. Mercury, trine Pluto, knows how to think very, very big, and he knew how to do that. Among his trinkets, he owned the California Angels baseball team. He always wanted a World Series, and he got, I think, one out away from getting there. I checked with a friend in Los Angeles. He got that close. He got one out away and didn't make it. The World Series. But I have heard interviews with some of his baseball players, And he would come into the locker room, and the baseball players, some of whom were pretty tough tobacco-chewing kinds of guys, were totally in awe of him. He'd come into the locker room, he'd be wearing a dress cowboy suit with all of those dangles hanging down, and he was always impeccably dressed, and he was beautiful to see, and he was a total gentleman, even though he had the power of financial clout over them. And the players just were in awe at the kind of gentleman that he was. All of this is obvious if we look at the chart. Venus is conjoined to the sun. So he sees himself as a gentle person. He sees himself as a compensatory person. And right about in the middle of that, which would be between 5 and 9 at 7 degrees and sextile over, we find a sextile to Jupiter. So he has all the qualities that we're talking about for attraction. It's obvious that he was personable, that he was very likable, and that he was a very generous person. I suspect that he wasn't always decisive, though, because there is a moon square, the same planets, and that would indicate a lot of indecision, especially with Libra being the sign that those planets are in. I don't want to say much more because we don't have a lot of time and because it's only a solar chart, only a moon chart. I said that if we had the real time, I would expect that the second house would be very strong because his personal possessions were huge, many millions of dollars. All right, here we have a horoscope of quite an attractive person, worldwide attractive. We're going to look at, for the, this one and the next one, we're going to look at elegant ladies. And I like elegant ladies, and this lady certainly was. Again, she fits all of our criteria. She's extremely generous. She has Sagittarius rising, which indicates generosity. And Jupiter, the ruler of the ascendant, is conjoined to Venus. So this is again amazingly attractive. It fits all of the things that we would expect. She was one of the most beloved of all first ladies that we've ever had. Even her political adversaries loved her. Huh? You don't like her? Oh, my goodness. Huh. She was not beautiful the way Elizabeth Taylor is beautiful. She has that big, horsey Sagittarius smile. But she won people over. And she gave of herself a lot. Now, she was raised extremely strictly. She was raised to be a debutante. And she was, in order to have perfect posture, they actually taped a rod to her back. And she was one of those people that had to walk with books on her head. And she went to finishing schools. And she, to learn French, she was sent to France. And so the thing that is really good about her is that despite all of this being the perfect lady and all of that, she didn't act that way. She charmed people, but she didn't charm people because of her cultural skills. She did it because she could relax. And a person who's relaxed can put other people at ease. And when that happens, everything flows with relaxation after that. Venus, the sun is in Libra, and she is by inner nature. She's loving and caring for the other. Two planets in the seventh house indicate that she's very oriented to the other and has to sacrifice for the other whether she likes it or not. No matter how things were, she always gave herself to the situation, and it's no wonder that she was attractive. I want to go fast because we've been talking astrology all week and we haven't had any questions, so I'll try and have this be short so that there's time for questions at the end. This is probably the most beloved first mother that the country has had. I like the whole family myself. Any president, if you think about Jimmy Carter, he did some really remarkable things. For a Baptist to tell Playboy magazine, yes, I do have sometimes lustful thoughts. That's honesty. And his honesty went so far that he even talked about seeing UFOs. I believe he saw UFOs out of the window of Air Force One. And then he had that incident where he had to fight off that vicious rabbit. I like the man. During the years that I've been able to see presidents, I think he's probably my favorite president. But he had to fight City Hall. All right, let's look at his mother's chart, Lillian. In terms of charm, this is very similar to the horoscope of Eleanor. Again, we have Sagittarius rising, and somebody who's very, very giving. But Saturn is not too far from the ascendant, so she has that matronly old woman kind of affability. Jupiter is again conjoined Venus. In fact, this is an even stronger conjunction. And she's probably famous, and in her social, in her social set, she probably just oozed all kinds of southern charm. The sun in this horoscope is in Sagittarius, and so probably she was even much more shiny than ascendant in Leo. Was even much more shiny than Eleanor, more sunny. Everything is amplified by the Jupiter-Venus being sextile to the moon. So everything works out in such a way that the person surely is going to be attractive and charming in all of those ways. It's interesting that both Eleanor and Lillian Carter have Mars-Neptune aspects. And Mars-Neptune aspects, whether for good or for bad, often indicate charisma. So there's charisma on top of just plain loving attractability. Mars together with Neptune sets up a field of energy, and that field of energy can be used one way or another. We saw it yesterday in the Charles Manson chart. There was a conjunction. In Eleanor's chart, the Mars... Neptune were a little bit more difficult because of the opposition. In this one, the Mars and Neptune are a conjunction. With all those planets in the seventh house, she probably ruled the roost. All right, let's look at another chart. This is another chart that is in question about its accuracy. We're now looking at the region of soul life. We've looked at just simple attraction and self-sacrifice. Now let's look at soul life. So we'll look at a couple of artists. Now there's a doubt about the authenticity of this chart because different researchers have different ideas. And there were calendar changes since the time of a change from the Julian to the Gregorian calendar, so there are possible difficulties with that. But we'll just proceed forward as though it were accurate. Sagittarius is rising, And so he has a great deal of generosity. He has a broad scope. Now we know Leonardo as a painter, and he was very excellent as a painter. Somebody wanted a proof of his ability, and what he did is he painted a perfect circle. They asked for his ability, and he took a canvas and he painted a perfect circle, meaning that he had to have an eye to be able to do that. But moreover, because of the way paintbrushes are made, you have to have a very good control, because you have to twist the paintbrush as you're making the circle. Because if you don't, the line of the circle is going to be of varying width. Now it'll be slender, now it'll be wide. Anybody who's ever done any sign painting can tell you that. So the man just went out there and just painted a circle, twisting the brush at the same time, and it was perfect. It was as if you had taken a compass and had done it. And his eye was so good that he painted series of pictures of birds. He had drawings of pictures of birds that he shows things in the way they fly, the way the muscles and the feathers work in the wings of the bird. And the only way you can do that now is to take movie pictures and slow them down into slow motion to catch those things. So he was able to remember to watch a bird in flight and remember in slow motion what the muscular action was and how things worked. Plus, he was exceedingly observant. He was in the time when painters studied physiognomy and expression. And he does those studies where he takes a head of a snarling lion and takes it through the metamorphosis and shows that the same features are on the face of a snarling person. So he's really, this is quite a remarkable individual. He was a scientist and he was an inventor. He invented the scissors and the bicycle, among many, many other things. He was an architect and he was an engineer. He was a geologist, he was a meteorologist, and he was a hydrologist. He had all kinds of inventions that he couldn't build. He had that he wasn't able to make it because the technology wasn't there. He was a very, very devout man, extremely devout Catholic. And the people of his time knew him for his poise and for his beauty. But he was so strong that he could bend horseshoes. Some of the things he couldn't get invented were airplanes, submarines, helicopters, machine guns, and tanks. But he had them on the drawing board. It's just amazing that somebody would have that kind of vision. Some people consider him the most intelligent human being that there has ever been. I don't know if I can go along with that. The people of his time knew him for two other things. He was most famous and infamous for two other qualities. He was famous for his ability as a magician. Not a prestidigitator, but a magician. He was capable of doing magic by manipulating the spiritual forces. But he was publicly denounced as a sodomist and a homosexual. The horoscope is not a horoscope. It's not a classic as a homosexual. But if he was a homosexual, he was a Freudian homosexual. There are different kinds of etiologies that describe homosexuality and its origin, and Freud's version was that there's too strong of a mother and too weak of a father, and with Saturn in the 10th house being square to the moon, he certainly does look like I've seen that often. In fact, the other way around, they put Saturn in the 4th house. Women who become lesbians, it's not the only way they become lesbians, but women who become lesbians often have Saturn in the 4th house. Not in the 10th house. All right, let's look at what we're supposed to be looking. Yes, that's what we're coming to right now. All right, he has the sun in Taurus. So he has the ability to compose things. And sun Taurus is excellent for composition. Now Jupiter, which rules the ascendant, is in a reasonably strong aspect with Venus, which shows this kind of, it's almost a greed aspect. This is the kind of thing when a person just can't stop giving or gives too much. And, we saw this yesterday in the chart of Jay Gould, and there was outright greed because it's too much. So he just kept attracting things to himself. And I think the way his art worked, he got on a roll when he got creative and just kept going on, never stopped. Jupiter also formed a stronger aspect, which is a trine to the moon, which magnifies all of those tendencies. And Pluto forms a Venus forms a sextile with Pluto, and a trine with Neptune, which indicates a great deal of subtle imagination. I think it is through his art that he came into clairvoyance. He didn't go from clairvoyance to art. He went from art to clairvoyance, because I think the Venus Neptune is the kind of imagination that would carry him into that. So he's able to hold things together with this kind of horoscope. Mars is very weak in this chart, and with the kind of etiology of homosexuality that we're talking about, that would reinforce Freud's point of view. I don't know what else more to say about it. Let's move on to the next horoscope before we... Yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I can't say anything that I haven't, because I didn't take a lot of time to study. I just looked for the attractive abilities and worked with that. I don't know. Mr. Heindel's view on sexuality, homosexuality, is that it's when one reaches for the octave planets before being thoroughly imbued in the Jupiterian qualities. He talked about this in Messenger to the Stars and says that you have to have the Jupiter morals, values, and philosophy, otherwise it's very easy to become errant and deviant when you run into Neptune and Uranus. And this is and Uranus is most common in male homosexuality, and Neptune is most common in female homosexuality. And so I think with the carelessness of Jupiter in this chart, he was not so founded. And that sort of thing happened. All right, we have the horoscope of another artist. Yeah, but he certainly wasn't homosexual. This is probably the horoscope of an extremely creative artist. Some people say not. They say that all of those wavy lines and all of that are a result of his seeing the world that way from having drunk too much absinthe. His paintings, if you go through, it was a touring exhibit of the family collection about 2 years ago. And if you follow that in terms of time, his later paintings do show mental illness or the isolation that he had in his psychic sphere. All right, he's a great original artist and maybe one of the best colorists that there has ever been. This is the horoscope of someone who set out to become a minister, but he almost killed himself in self-sacrifice and in self-denial and service. He's got that Jupiter again square to Venus, which is excessive. And in religious service to very poor people, he just gave himself until he was, he's sleeping in the cold with no blankets and basically like in a shell of a house, and they had to come for him because he couldn't take care of himself anymore. All he cared about was serving the poor their material needs and their spiritual needs. This is a strong fire-water chart. If you look, you see a lot of planets in both fire and water, and the ascendant is in water. And fire-water charts are very good for creativity. Those opposing, you know, if you just want to do scholarly work and sort of be a namby-pamby, you become an air-earth chart. But a fire-water chart is a chart that wants to create things. In all creation myths, it's a struggle between fire and water, which is the same struggle as that of the Lucifers that we were talking about last night. The chart, again, has the Jupiter square Venus, which indicates extreme generosity and extreme attraction. And again, he's like Leonardo. This is a person that would get on a roll and would maybe paint 3 paintings within a day. He almost couldn't stop. You know, he would get a conception of something. He couldn't stop himself and would just keep going and going and going like that. He's probably very good at composition, but not as composed because of the planets and Taurus, but not as composed as Leonardo. There is some repulsion in this chart, not from Saturn, but from the Sun in Aries and the strong Mars. And so this is somebody that constantly fought the battle of attraction, repulsion, even in the subjects of his art, in the way he uses the opposite colors, strong colors with little twinges of the opposite color, is sort of like an attraction, repulsion type of quality. This is somebody that is excited by beauty. All right, let's move one level up in the desire world and go to the realm of soul light. By the time we get to the realm of soul light, the giving has gone beyond just attracting things in composition. The consciousness is so much focused on the other that one becomes altruistic. So the more the emphasis as we go on at the higher levels is going to be more and more other-oriented. This is perfectly psychological, because that's what we'd expect, that from the beauty of things, we see the beauty of the pure spirit as it goes through all people, and the attachment to individuality becomes less and less. Now, it's hard to find altruistic charts, because the world doesn't celebrate altruism. And we have two here that are pretty good altruists. In fact, almost all the rest of the charts are going to be Catholic charts. This is the horoscope of a Jesuit priest. During his lifetime, he published books on paleontology and on evolution, but he had to be careful there because the church was on him. His spiritual books he was not allowed to publish. The Order of Jesus would not allow him to publish them. He studied a lot of anthropology, and he was interested in humans as humans, which is a very good description of an altruist. An altruist is not just a shallow, blasé loving of all people on the surface or something like that. There is a real caring about other people. This is a very good example of an altruist. He was a practical altruist as well. The practicality probably comes from all those planets in Taurus and Gemini, certainly plenty practical. In that, in the First World War, he worked as a non-combatant person who carried wounded off the battlefield for either side. He was not didn't care for one side or the other. After his death, when the order no longer could control him by his oath, his other books were published, and they're called The Divine Milieu and The Phenomena of Man. and in them his altruistic views come out. He has something that he came to all on his own that is certainly not as exact as the cosmo conception is, but he approaches that with his understanding of the evolution of consciousness in humans and his understanding of evolution through paleontology. He became very fascinated by what makes and the capacity that that humans had for goodness that was almost unlimited. Six of the 10 planets are in the 11th house, the house of friendship. And friendship is just another name for altruism. Christ in that upper room, that Aquarian upper room, said, "Ye are my friends." In this case, Venus is conjoined to Saturn and Jupiter. So not only was there an attraction, but there is something cohesive with the Saturn, something concentrated. And if the fifth house is giving of gifts as an individual, an outpouring of children of the mind in a universal way is what the 11th house is like. So this is an extremely, extremely giving person. Neptune is there also as part of this revolving conjunction that runs all the way from Venus through to Neptune. It doesn't quite get to Pluto. So this indicates that all of this had a very spiritual element about it. And all of these planets are trine to Uranus, which is the planet of altruism. So this is someone who indeed had universal love and who could literally go from the bedrock, because Taurus rules bedrock, he could go from bedrock all the way to the realm of life spirit. And it's a very great horoscope in that regard. So he's firmly rooted in altruism. All right, let's quickly move on to the next chart here. Yes. The phenomenon of man is the most, the divine milieu. He was French, so that's not as famous for altruism and the great human qualities as the phenomena of man. Yeah, phenomena of man. Phenomena is plural, which means that he thinks there are many things going on with humans. I got the name backwards. This is not Merton Thomas. This is Thomas Merton. I'm sure most of you have heard of him. He was a Trappist monk who spent at least 8 years straight in total silence. I'm in awe of this person because this is someone who could pray 7 hours a day every day and did that. His literary output was prolific. Even the other monks around him were astounded. He has written over 50 books on sacred issues, literary issues, and human issues. The first book that he wrote was called The Seven Story Mountain, and it was a bestseller, but it never made the New York Times bestseller list because the New York Times said, "We don't list religious books." He's just a very, very profound man. He did talk when he had to. The order allowed that. And when it was in concordance with his calling, he was a great conversationalist. He was extremely witty. And he loved literature and he loved the arts. And he even took a little drink every now and then. He didn't get drunk or anything like that. And he was an expert at Latin. And he was a critic both in literature and in theology, and was very well known for both. But he was condemned for a while by the order as a blasphemer. And this is the reason I really love him. He was condemned as a blasphemer because he loved jazz music and because he liked naughty jokes. And anybody who can pray 7 hours a day and likes jazz and naughty jokes is stellar in my book. A man after my own heart. He rarely left silence and solitude, which he really, really liked. But he did take trips. He took a trip to Asia, and that's where he died. He met the Dalai Lama and had conversations with the Dalai Lama, and they got on famously because they spoke the same language. It's a funny thing. He visited the Buddhists in Thailand, and he was staying in one of those little Thai Buddhist huts, and he walked out on the porch, and he brushed against a fan, and the fan had a short in it, and he was electrocuted. All right. This is... Oh, yes, I forgot to mention that. Yes, he had an enormously difficult time. This is the opposition of Moon to Uranus and the Sun. The fifth house is love affairs, and the 11th house is like altruism and friendship. He fell in love with a woman, and he struggled over it month after month after month because he had taken these vows. And he eventually overcame it, I guess by prayer, but he was really, really deeply in love. And I think that's great too, that somebody can have this kind of life where they're constantly aspiring to living in a higher way, but yet have all of the experiences that everybody else in life has. Can you add something more about the love affair?
No, except that I believe it was
It was?
Yeah.
Oh. Yes. Are you saying that there was a child as a result in the? Oh, that surprises me. That doesn't seem perfectly consistent with the character. I think yes, that would be that. I have a famous chart. Oh, I have a friend that grew up in Argentina. And the lighting is not the best sort of thing in South America. They have a lot of cables that come down from the ceiling with a socket in. And she was a child in bed, and there was no bulb in the socket. She was following with her finger around the coil, and she got up in there and she got shocked. And she lost all capacity to speak for over a half a year. And they tried speaking to her and tried, they couldn't do it. And what happens in things like that, some languages are found in one part of the brain, like Sanskrit is found in a very obscure part of the brain. And other languages are found in another part of the brain, and they got a German maid in. And the German maid started speaking German, and she started learning German. And as soon as she got a little way with German, she could lace into that part of the brain where the Spanish was, and all its click, the Spanish came back all in an instant once she was able to access that part of the brain. You know, the synapses were connected. And she has Uranus conjoined the ascendant, and I believe Mars and or Sun are involved in it too. Can't be Sun, must be Mars. But it's that kind of thing. As the Uranus certainly indicates that. All right. So it's a classic for altruism. Five planets are in Aquarius, and three of the five, and the most two of the most important three, Sun and Uranus, are in the 11th house. So this is a classic for altruism. Again, we find somebody that's very, very giving. We have a Venus this time sextile to Jupiter, so it's a very attractive sort of thing. And I imagine that his internal struggle with the woman that he was in love with, there was a great difference in age, which you would expect with Saturn opposite to Venus. And I imagine that it was probably a very frantic kind of thing because of the Uranus opposite the moon would almost be hysterical emotional expression. His joy in solitude is probably due to the Jupiter conjoined Mercury. Just loves, in the 12th house, obviously, he loves to be away from the world, in retreat, and in silence. This is a very good chart for a monk. I have Mercury square Jupiter, and I love silence. You'd never tell it from as much as I've been talking this week. But I can't, most days, when I close the bookstore, I can't wait to get all alone and do nothing by myself. Even if I, you know, sometimes I do things, but I just like being alone and being quiet. One of his favorite Bible verses was, "'Tis more blessed to give than receive." All right, let's look at another giver. We're now working into, one way or another, the realm of soul power. Normally, when we hear the word philanthropy, we think of gifts and foundations and donors and things like that. And that is true. But in the Rosicrucian philosophy, by philanthropy, we mean giving to all of humanity and giving to the entirety of the cosmos, just general giving. It's the highest region of the desire world, which is very philanthropic, is called the region of soul power. And it's wonderful that power, the soul power, the magical ability that comes from the desire world is associated with giving. I am finding out more and more every day. Who was it? It was either Earl or John that talked, I think it was Earl, talking about how do you domesticate something, or how do you take somebody, was it you? It was you, okay. How do you domesticate something? You give it food. And when you give, you have power. But it isn't a personal power, it's a more general kind of power. All right, let's look at material philanthropy first. We have Andrew Carnegie, who was the first billionaire in the United States. The first billionaire quite a long time ago. He founded United States Steel, which is now, what did they call it? United something or another. They don't have anything to do with steel anymore. USS has nothing, doesn't own anything with steel. Andrew Carnegie was one of the greatest donors in US history. Just in libraries alone, he gave over $350 million to libraries. Other cultural facilities he gave to equally generously. We have Carnegie Hall, for example, which is a consequence of his giving. He has Scorpio rising, which you might expect with a steel magnate. And Jupiter's in the first, Sun is in the first house. And this is the horoscope of a self-made man. Beyond that, he has all kinds of generosity, basically, from Jupiter. He has a little bit of trouble with power because of Jupiter is squared Pluto, and that has to do with power and prejudice and all of those things. He doesn't have the Venus Jupiter that we had, so he has to be doing his giving by the Venus all alone and not with the Venus-Jupiter aspect. And for some reason, this says to me that maybe some of his generosity and philanthropy was shallow and not really philanthropical. It wasn't like he was really giving of himself. So let's try to get to some other philanthropy.
For an aspect,
Yes.
If we look at Venus, Jupiter, and Pluto, we have what's called the dominant core.
Oh, yes. If yes, since the orb is good, I would agree with you. I would call it an external square trine. But I'll give you some tapes on those kinds of patterns. It's called external because the square is not within the trine of the square. The Jupiter square Pluto is not inside the trine of Venus and Pluto. If Jupiter were in either Capricorn or Pisces, it would then be an internal square. It would be within. And the way the two of them work is a very, very different way. No. I think there's a generosity there, but it's sort of a, I've got so much, why not be generous? Like, I think the philanthropist in the United States right now is probably Bill Gates. But when you have as many billions as he has, it's easy to be the biggest, and you're not really, really sacrificing in the giving. The self-made qualities, the reason I think it's very hard for him to be a true philanthropist. There have been true philanthropists. Just a few years ago, there was a man who was a jain who made hundreds of millions of dollars in international trading, and he gave it all up. And he walked the streets, walked the paths in India completely nude. He was a jain, and he lived off of the charity of people and just prayed for people, and that was his whole life. And when you give your whole life in that way, that is a real philanthropy, especially when you're giving up hundreds of millions of dollars to do so. He just gave it all up. He said, all right, you're my family. You can have it. I earned it all for you. I've done my duty to the world. Let me go out and do what my heart tells me to do. And I think the reason why it would be hard for Andrew Carnegie to be a true philanthropist is because the Sun Mars in the first house, especially with the Mars ruling the ascendant, indicates an individualist. You know, this is a driving hard man, and it's just not within the character of a driving hard man like that to be totally philanthropical. He's a rugged individualist. Most of the robber barons and the millionaires, billionaires of the late 19th century were Scotch. The Jay Gould chart that we looked at yesterday, he was an Englishman. There is a prejudice in our society to say that the wealth was concentrated in the hands of Jewish people. That's not true. It's not true at all. Mellon from the Mellon Foundation and Commodore Vanderbilt, these are all Scotch and English. Yeah. I don't know. He was just, I see him as just a very a driving kind of man. Did it on the drive, yeah. A captain of industry, I think he'd call somebody like that rather than the captain. All right, this is a man that I liked very much, or I liked a lot of the stands he took. This is a pro-life man who gave, everybody knows who this is, right? Yeah, this is Pope John Paul II. He gave everything he had in his life, he gave to his work. This is an attractive horoscope. It again has Libra rising, but he's certainly not attractive in the way that Elizabeth Taylor was attractive. This is another one of those horoscopes that has the Venus square Jupiter. That when people get over get carried away with generosity. They can't stop themselves. And I think this is the case of this man. He just loved and gave and loved and gave. And this is the sextile one. Yeah, I'm sorry. I got two sets of notes here. I got to be so careful that I don't get them confused. No, this is the square one. Yeah. All right. Yes. Beyond that, Jupiter is square, is conjoined Neptune. So this is a pope that wasn't just religious. This is a pope that had a spiritual generosity. And the Venus-Jupiter is an extreme kind of giving, but I think that the Neptune-Jupiter indicates a quality of spiritual giving. And that's why I put him in here as the philanthropist, because I think he gives to the whole cosmos as a result of being charged spiritually. Doesn't mean he's a perfect man. Pluto is in the ninth house, and that indicates that old-fashioned religion. Give me that old-fashioned religion, if it, you know, like we never break with the ways of the Catholic Church. This is the way it's always been, and it's the way it's always going to be. It's a very, very excellent Pluto, but he still believes in the power of the Church and the extreme conservatism of the Church. He isn't so much that he is a dangerous reactionary, but that's the way he looks at things. Like, if you look at this compared to other people in the world, this was a completely pro-life person. He didn't believe in abortion. I suspect that he was probably a vegetarian. He didn't believe in war. He didn't believe in capital punishment. He did it for those Plutonian theological reasons, but he was totally pro-life. And I just liked the man enormously. The terrible T-square between Saturn, Uranus, Moon, and maybe even Sun, that's a difficult T-square. That shows the battle that he had to deal with. Saturn indicates the old, Uranus indicates the new, and he's cornered between the two of them and can't decide between the old ways and the new ways. All right, one more to look at here. That might have some, I don't know whether it has to do with these people, because you'd need a large sample for that, or whether it has to do with the investigator. That's one of the things when you're doing astrological research. You attract yourself to things that you can see, and the horoscopes that you're drawn to are just like the people that you're drawn to. They're an expression of you as much as an expression of a universal principle. Saturn principle, I think there's a better way to look at it. The moon is the physical consolidator. Like the moon cycle between the sun and the moon, the life comes from the sun, but the consolidation into form comes from the moon. And when the moon is going north at the north node, that's the beginning of the part of the cycle that the moon is consolidating. But when it comes to the south node, it is deconsolidating. And so the south node has a deconsolidating quality to it, and I would think a softening of hardening or a decrystallization, if you like that word. I don't like the word crystallization, because crystallization to me is a high state, but hardening is not. But we're going to talk about that tonight. Talking about... No, the south node really is a deconsolidator. The north node is like the moon as it's building up and getting pregnant from the life of the sun, and all of the things of the moon are being built in that phase. And the south is where you're withdrawing and things are sort of pulling away. This is Mother Teresa, and we'll just glance at it. It's a very good high to end on. Again, we have a Sagittarius rising, which means she gives and she gives all. And again, we have Jupiter in the ninth house, and her giving is her religion. That's her whole way. Again, we have the Jupiter sextile Venus. So we have somebody who is very, very attractive, and she's attractive because of her loving acts. Venus is in the eighth house, which means that her loving acts are done in secret. She doesn't want them to be out in the open. I actually believe that she chose to die intentionally at the time when Princess Di died, because all of the attention would go to Princess Diana, and then she could quietly slip out without the world. And that's the kind of person that she really was. And that's the best kind of philanthropy that you can think of, because there's no possibility of ego getting in the way. And boy, that's really something. She has a lot of charm and Venusian qualities about her, but she keeps them all hidden. She kept herself in a very simple, plain kind of way. If we look at this chart, all the planets but Uranus are in the west. And this means her whole consciousness is dedicated to the other. She's not caring about herself. And this is indicated by the fact that if you take the basic aspects, the sun is unaspected. And sometimes when the sun is unaspected, it's a person who doesn't have anything together at all. In this case, I think you have to interpret the sun as unaspected as meaning that she doesn't want to have her ego or her selfhood intruding in any way in what she's doing. So this is a philanthropist of a very, very high order, and someone that works the way the highest part of the desire world works. And that's all I have to offer.
That's
pretty weak.
And the Saturn trine.
Yeah. Not really strong.
The moon?
The sun? No, the moon's got all kinds of aspects. The moon's a sextile to Neptune. All right. If there are no questions, I was going to have this open for questions. I have a set of charts here if anybody wants a full set of charts that didn't get a set. Obviously, if you want to look at these charts and study them, you want to do a much more thorough job than this slapdash kind of thing. I don't know. I could speculate, but it wouldn't be kind. Pluto square moon? Pluto square Mercury is someone who is inclined to extreme mental blocks. That someone who confounds oneself mentally. They confound themselves by asking questions and expecting absolute answers. It is the famous mental boggle aspect. Yesterday we saw the Pluto conjoined Mercury in Charles Baudelaire, and there it was, he spoke in non sequiturs, and that was meaningless. And some of the questions of Pluto-Mercury questions are meaningless. Like the classic example is roundness. You can say, what can you do with roundness? Well, you can make a wheel and put it on a cart. But if you ask, why is round round, there's no answer to that. It's an impossible question, and your mind is boggled if you try to answer that kind of impossible thing. Well, why is round round? Because it's round. You can't say anything more beyond that. And the Mercury square Pluto is inclined to do that kind of thinking. Okay. O God, increase our love for Thee, so that we may serve Thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in Thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Let's let it cool down for about 10 minutes. We got 10 minutes for John yet.